Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Today, I have the honor of speaking with Attorney General of Maine, Janet Mills, and businessman Sean Moody, both who are running for governor of the great state of Maine. I am truly looking forward to discussing with both of them their vision for the next 4 years. First, we will be interviewing Attorney General Mills and then businessman Sean Moody. This interview is designed to be a positive conversation where we focus on issues and concerns that business leaders, HR professionals, and employees care about today. I have some questions that I've not only created, but I have also asked business leaders and show listeners over the past week. So first, let's start with our interview with Attorney General Mills. Welcome, Attorney General Mills.
Well, thank you for having me, Dave.
Oh, I'm excited to have you on. This is great. You know, I've watched your career over the years. You're obviously doing very well. Why would you run for governor?
Why not? I feel like I know how to turn things around. I know how state government works. Some people think that's a bad thing. I happen to think it's a good thing to know how to make change and effectuate, you know, affect good public policy. I spent 4 years on the Appropriations Committee, which none of the other Democrat candidates have done. And those were four tough years because it was during the recession of 2008 and around that time. And we had to, you know, work across the aisle with Republicans and forge seven budgets in 4 years. I used to kiddingly call it the de-appropriations committee because we were always trying to, you know, cut in a fashion that would still preserve education funding, still preserve the basic social safety net of government, and preserve some good programs, but, you know, making a lot of de-appropriations. So I had that experience. I have run an executive agency with a $42 million budget. I know how to make state government work.
You know, I think it's fair to say that Maine's economy has certainly improved over the last 4 years. Job growth has been strong, unemployment's at 2.7%. Tax revenue is also strong, especially on the business side, and Mainers' consumer confidence is nearing a high. Should we change course in what we're doing and why?
Well, we do change course because although we have a low unemployment rate, I run into people every day who are working two and three part-time jobs just to get by. So it seems like whether it's the wages or the cost of living or a combination of both, people are not seeing their goals achieved. They're not feeling better about the economy. Whereas unemployment rates in Washington County, Somerset, Piscataquis, are not satisfactory, and people are having a hard time finding good jobs, good-paying jobs. One of the issues is cost of living, and that involves energy costs, transportation costs, electricity, and healthcare. Healthcare is a big cost driver for employers and workers alike. So that's something we think we've got to address. But we have a lot of challenges. I mean, there have been some changes for the better and changes for the worse. But we've got to encourage people to come here, to new businesses to locate here, and existing businesses to remain here. That means improving infrastructure and attracting young workers from wherever they may come. What I hear from employers is that they don't have the workforce they need, you know, especially in areas with high unemployment. We need more software engineers. We need more electrical engineers. We need more people in the trades.
And we're talking today with Attorney General of Maine, Janet Mills, who is running as Democratic candidate for governor. I'm your host, David Chulo. You know, companies must compete today. And whether real or perceived, the shortage of tech-savvy people has affected the way companies do business. This is a hiring challenge for the state. Some say the reason is that there's a skills gap. Others say that, you know, certainly the current older workforce, which is a large percent of the workforce here in Maine, is a problem. But also there's questions about the fact that, you know, young workers are leaving the state. What do you expect to do over the next 4 years if elected governor? What do you and your administration really expect to do to solve this problem in 4 years?
Well, a couple of things. One is we three things on the economy. One is infrastructure. One is and the other is research and development. And the third is education. Those three things, I think, combine to produce a good economy. When I talk about infrastructure, I don't mean just roads and bridges, although they're in dire need of help. You know, we haven't built any new roads in 7 or 8 years, and there are a lot in need of repair. Infrastructure is important to employers and people moving here, and not only infrastructure in rock and dirt stuff, but and bridges, but cell phone service and broadband. I think it's kind of ridiculous that we are in a state where if you drive from the state's largest city to the state's capital or back on one of the busiest highways in the state, you drop a call right at mile 47. Always you drop a call on the state's busiest highway. That's got to be addressed. I mean, cell phone service shouldn't be that sketchy and intermittent. And broadband, most employers and new employers and small businesses looking to locate here are looking for good Internet service. We don't have really a statewide strategy for broadband, and that's critical as well. I have friends who practice tax law on Deer Isle. They came back to Maine to raise their family here. But their biggest challenge is not having good Internet service. It's a hodgepodge of things. So I asked them, well, when you have a file to get back to your clients in Delaware, what do you do? And what they said, well, if it's an important file, we'll drive over to the Dunkin' Donuts in Blue Hill and sit outside and use their Wi-Fi and mail it that way, send it that way. That's not acceptable. We've got to do a better job strategizing about good Internet service in all communities. That's critical to business. It's critical to education, for kids to do their homework online, or health care. Wouldn't it be great to allow seniors to stay in their homes by having telehealth connected to their homes so that their primary care physician or their hospital can take their blood pressure and vital signs over the phone or over the Internet with high-speed broadband? These are all critical things for infrastructure. Secondly, research and development. We're, I think, 37th in the nation in the amount we spend, percentage of money we spend on research and development out of the gross domestic product. We need to do more that way. We've got tremendous veterinary medicine facilities in Maine, and we could be, you know, veterinarian biopharmaceutical capital of the world. We, between IDEX and Vets First Choice and what they're doing at Jackson Labs, and MDI and biological labs, we could be number one in the world in that area. We need to improve research and development, encourage what's going on at the Advanced Structures and Composites program at Orono, and support that fully. They're inventing new ways of using cross-laminated timbers for construction, for maybe telephone poles and that kind of thing. We've got a lot of offshoot businesses that are existing off of that research, and we could do more that way, marketing those great products that they're producing in Orono. And thirdly, education. I think when young families move here, they want to have a good education, public education system. That's one of our competitive advantages. We have a pretty good competitive education system, but we need a cradle-to-college strategy, starting with Head Start only. And more computer sciences, and I think that's critical for workforce needs, for employers. They're looking for people who have technology skills. I would support having computer sciences in the middle schools. We don't have enough of them in the high schools yet, but middle school curricula, including computer sciences, led by training from the state level, and expanding computer curricula, computer coding, computer programming. These are the jobs of the present, not the future.
Janet, it's interesting. You're right. Certainly there are a lot of areas where we have to look at the middle schools, the high schools, the education system. But the real question today is the need is now. The need is right now for employers. You have an economy that's going really mm-hmm. strong. You've got employers screaming because we can't find workers. You have employers really concerned because the job market is so tight that there are businesses here in the state that can't open for the season because they can't find workers. So what you're talking about is absolutely correct from a long-term perspective, and agree that things need to be done. What in the next 4 years, in the next year, heck, with mm-hmm. the 4 years, what in the next year can be done to really solve this problem?
Well, two things that are fairly controversial. One is we've got to welcome new Mainers. You know, there are people coming to this country, and I don't care what their religion is, but I think we should welcome them here. Something like 40% of the new Mainers, new immigrants in the Portland area alone, have bachelor's degrees or better. The fact is they bring good job skills. What we're lacking there is better English language training, enhanced adult education. I understand from some folks that there's a two-year waiting list for some of the adult ed programs to teach people to speak English. And secondly, certifications, matching their licenses and certifications and qualifications in their home country with what we have here and see if they can become compatible. So there's those things, certification of licensing compatibility and English language issues. That could be done. Secondly, the second controversial issue is the opiate epidemic. I hear from employers everywhere that they're concerned about the workforce being competent and adequate. The people who do apply for jobs, the employers want to know that they're not doing drugs on the job, that they're not coming to work stoned, or not taking heroin. It's a tough issue. There's a real addiction problem out there, and we've got to address that. And I have a whole plan to address the opiate epidemic on day one, and that involves, you know, having substance abuse counselors and recovery coaches on call, having medication-assisted treatment, getting involved in prevention and education and treatment in a much bigger way. So those things I think employers would appreciate and would help expand the workforce for their benefit.
And we're talking today with Attorney General of Maine, Janet Mills, who is running as Democratic candidate for governor. Employers are certainly concerned with the impending recreational legalization of marijuana here in the state of Maine. Certainly when you just mentioned about the opioid epidemic is certainly an issue that is out there already. We know it's a violation of federal law, and there's no question about that, but yet the state continues to move forward, and the voters decided to make that work. What is your position on this topic, and how do you see vetting this issue and dealing with the employer issues you talked about? One, you know, how do we deal with these issues? How do we deal with the classes of people that are federal employees that have to be treated differently, or DOT employees that have to be treated differently? How does that all work in your administration?
Oh, boy. It's not uncomplicated, as you know. look, I'm not opposed to recreational marijuana. I think in the area of marijuana, you've got to do three things. You got to test it, track it, and tax it. And in the new law that was passed over the governor's veto, I believe there are different employment provisions than what used to be in the law. So I'm pleased that they've been trying to address that. I think they're saying now that an employer is not required to accommodate the use of marijuana in the workplace. That's good news. Secondly, an employer may enact or adopt workplace policy restricting the use of marijuana by employees in the workplace or, you know, engaged in activities in the scope of employment. And an employer may discipline employees who are under the influence of marijuana in the workplace. So those three things are, I think, an improvement on the prior law. And what's difficult is to tell when somebody's actually under the influence. You know, there's no actual legal standard for driving under the influence in Maine.
Yes.
Under the influence of marijuana. And that's really been a bone of contention. I know the Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee debated that for months and came up with basically nothing, no way to determine if somebody's under the influence of marijuana while they're driving a vehicle. Now, if an employer has a federal contract to boot, obviously there are other federal ramifications, and they are not allowed to have marijuana use in the workplace in any event. And a lot of employers have federal contracts, so they need to consult with legal counsel on what they can and can't do in the workplace within the ramifications of the new law.
And we're talking today with Attorney General Janet Mills, who is running as a Democratic candidate for governor. I'm your host, David Chulo. I want to switch gears in terms of the other issue having to do with minimum wage. The voters of the state of Maine voted to continue to increase the minimum wage virtually every year for the next few years. It's currently $10 an hour, and some say it's going to go up to 15, maybe 20, or even higher. What's your position on the minimum wage versus the living wage? And do you really think that, for example, a high school individual at 14 years old entering the workforce should be paid $15 or $20 an hour just out at a job from a part-time job working at, for example, an ice cream shop?
Well, you know, the people have voted on the minimum wage, and I got a pretty substantial vote at the polls. And I would not favor changing that at this point. I think the law requires it to go up to, for annual increases, up to $12 an hour in 2020, and annual cost of living increases thereafter. I think the more interesting issue, the living wage you mentioned, is a more interesting issue, because what a living wage may be in Portland is may be quite different than a living wage in Fort Fairfield or
You're exactly
Waterville,
right. That's the challenge,
you know,
isn't it? Yeah.
The prevailing wage is one of the criteria used in state contracts. Prevailing wage of the area, labor, statistical marketing area, and metropolitan area. And that's a different issue, and that's required by state law for state contractors. And I think in the essential programs and services model for education funding, there's also a regional cost of living adjustment in the teachers' wages, part of ESP, essential programs and services, EPS, sorry. So you got to look at things regionally to some extent. I would oppose changing what's in the law now. I think the people have voted, the people have spoken. I would not want to roll back that measure. That sends a bad signal.
Portland is looking to potentially have a paid sick time ordinance.
Yes.
That has certainly been out there. It's in other states, and it's been talked about. Do you support that? And if you do, why? Or if you don't, why not?
Well, you know, it takes a village, as they say. And Portland's got its own issues. I think that statewide, we need to look at paid family leave. In four other states, it's been done. It's been enacted without burdening the employer. And I want to look at that a lot more deeply, but I think we've got to look at paid family leave as an employer-friendly proposal. For employers of a certain size, and I can't tell you right now how many employees that might be, but I think of employers of a sizable nature, they need to accommodate family leave and paid family leave. And we can do that by looking at other states, what Rhode Island and other states have done. And I think they have funded it on the basis of employee taxes of some sort, employee contributions that build up and support, sort of like a health savings account in some states, build up the money to be able to take a paid leave when a family emergency arises. I mean, a huge percentage of Maine people are now or have recently been caregivers for either elderly adults or small children or disabled individuals in their family. We've got to accommodate their needs and allow them to stay in the workforce, the private workforce, and also be able to take care of families in dire needs. You know, if you have an hourly position in particular, it's really tough to take time off. And to have it unpaid, especially for low-wage workers, it's really a disaster for the family.
And we're talking today with Attorney General Janet Mills. You know, you mentioned a little bit about health care, and I think that's certainly a huge concern from an employer and an employee perspective here in the state. You know, costs continue to go up. You know, I'll give an example. You know, I own a business here in Portland. I own two. And,
yeah.
You know, I did a comparison analysis that if I moved my business to New Hampshire and bought the exact same health care plan, exact same, no different, the cost would be almost 30% less to buy it in New Hampshire than I would in Maine. How do we deal with that issue here in the state? And how do we deal with the issue with allowing potentially plans being bought outside state lines? Or now they're talking about association plans. So how would you address this critical issue? Because it's a real serious cost issue for employers. And employees, I'll add. And employees.
Yeah. Going to the broader picture. Employment-based health insurance goes back to the 1940s, during World War II, when President Roosevelt imposed a wage and price freeze during the war. It caused a lot of hackles to go up, and as compensation, he promised the workforce that they could negotiate over health care and that employers would get tax benefits for providing health insurance in the workplace. Now, fundamentally, we're just about the only civilized country, the only country in the world that where your health insurance, your availability of health care, depends on your employment. That's a fundamental premise that needs to be addressed at the national level. It doesn't seem fair to me to burden employers and employees and to limit mobility of the workforce by the restrictions of your health insurance. So that's something that has to be dealt with on the national level. Many of us in the Democratic primary are talking about single-payer or universal health care as a goal. Pretty difficult to do it in one state alone. Vermont tried to do single-payer health insurance. They found it impossible. So we've got to be talking to other states about expanding health care services and controlling costs as well. I think that when we look at the cost of pharmaceutical prescription drugs, just skyrocketed. We need to address that on the state level and the national level. So controlling costs and expanding access to health care. Right now, with Medicaid expansion, there'll be something, an estimated 70,000 people additionally eligible for Medicaid, main care. And then the level above that, the income level above that, many are qualified for the Affordable Care Act benefits. But there are small businesses and individuals who are buying insurance on the open market that are really, really getting taken for a ride there. Their premiums are just out of sight. That's the group I'd like to focus on and see what we can do to pool insurance, to offer them some kind of subsidy or benefit to allow them to buy into a pool of health insurance coverage. Those people are being crippled right now with health insurance costs.
And we're talking today with Attorney General Janet Mills, who is running as a Democratic candidate for governor. I'm your host, David Chulo. So one of the major issues, of course, is I've never met anybody that says they want to pay more in taxes. No employer I've ever met said, hey, let's go pay some more in taxes, right? No business owner has ever said, I want to pay more in taxes. But there is an issue in terms of the cost of living here in Maine. And I can give you a quick example. We've moved people from out of state as recruiters and move them to the state of Maine. They're amazed at the cost of living, especially in the Portland area, is very similar to the cost in Boston, but the wages are certainly not the same. How do we deal with the fact of our tax structure here in the state at a high level? And what are you going to talk about in the next 4 years to change to make those better?
Oh, great question. Well, you know, the tax structure involves a whole lot of things. I've talked with a lot of employers in Maine. They're complaining more, and individuals are complaining more about the property taxes. And I think some of the income tax reductions that the current administration has affected, have shifted the taxes onto property taxpayers. And that's the focus right now, I think. Giving Maine residents a benefit for through the circuit breaker program, for instance, we can enhance the circuit breaker program. We could, again, fund revenue sharing so the towns aren't starving for revenues from the state in order to, especially the service centers that don't have enough of a property tax base. So revenue sharing, education funding from the state. The state needs to fulfill its commitment to 55% of education funding. So those measures will help reduce the burden on the property taxes. Income taxes, you know, we have about $140 million in surplus right now. So we need to analyze where that's coming from and where it should be going. Should it stay in the stabilization fund? How much of it should stay in the stabilization fund? Where else are we not taking advantage of federal funds that we could be using as revenues for good programs, like in public health and education and environmental regulation, that kind of thing?
As we wrap up the show today, and again, we're talking with Attorney General of Maine, Janet Mills, who's running as a Democratic candidate for governor this year. As you are heading towards the primary here, why should somebody vote for you?
I think I'm the most qualified person for the job. If I were applying for a job in one of your businesses, I think you'd hire me. I think you would. And any of your clients would probably hire me because I've got the qualifications. And I've got more. I suggest I'm the most qualified person for the job. I've run an executive agency with a $42 million budget. I've been in the private sector for 14 years in a small business and representing individuals and other small businesses in Western Maine. I've had experience on the Appropriations Committee, getting budgets done. I know how to do that. I know the sources of funding. I know the personnel issues. And fundamentally, I just want to be the biggest cheerleader for the state of Maine. I want to tell the world what a great place we are, what great people we have, what a great work ethic, and what great natural resources. I think, you know, they'll come here if they hear the right song from the leadership in Augusta, and we need new leadership. And I plan to be that new leader and to tell the world what a great state we have, and welcome businesses here, and welcome the new workforce here to contribute to our state's economy and make everyone better off. I see a state, my vision is of a state undivided, not north and south, first district, second district, a state undivided that's prosperous north to south and west to east. That's my vision of the state. I'm the only Democrat running from the second congressional district, and I think I can bring people together and get the job done.
Janet, it has been a pleasure having you on today, the HR Power Hour. I thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Dave.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, General Manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsandme.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsandME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsandme.com. That's jobsandme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
So today we're interviewing businessman Sean Mooney, who's running for governor as a Republican candidate. Sean, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate what you're doing for the employee community in the state of Maine. You know, workforce development is on the top of every employer's mind, and you've been leading that charge for several years. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. So here's my first question. What in Lord's name possessed you to decide to run for governor?
Well, that's a good question. I really feel I'm going to go back to the beginning of the country. You know, our founding fathers had a vision on who they wanted to lead America and to build America. And you take that cast of characters, if you will. You know, they were farmers, they were blacksmiths, they were business people, and they'd gone out and built a reputation in their local communities, and then they went and served the country, and then they went back to work. And I feel like we've gotten away from that model. You know, people go to school for political science, they get active in politics, they get elected, and then they just make a career out of politics. And I think that's why the country is in the shape it's in. I think you see that trend changing, you know, with Governor LePage. Look at President Trump. I think people are seeing the results and the benefits of getting a business person into key influential positions, like governor, for example, to lead the state. And I hope to continue Governor LePage's fiscal policies, fiscal conservatism, and help build on his fiscal foundation.
You know, I think it's fair to say that Maine's economy has certainly improved over the last 4 years. Job growth has been strong, and employment's at 2.7%. Tax revenue's strong, especially on the business side. And Mainers, their consumer confidence is nearing a high. Should we change course in what we're doing, and why?
Well, here we are. I'm kind of vetting out a problem out of a painted really a realistic and a great picture of growth for the state of Maine. But, Dave, it still comes back to a spending problem. You know, when you look at Augusta right now, We're looking at $160 million in additional K-12 spending that has no outcomes attached to it. You know, how are we going to improve education? No measurable matrices that any business person would have in place. We're looking at a Medicaid expansion referendum that could cost as much as $80 to $100 million a year. So it's the same old scenario where, okay, now we're on an economic run. We could put some money away like the governor's worked so hard to do to build on that rainy day fund. And they're just looking to spend it faster than we could bring it in. So that's the problem with politicians is they look at economic growth as an opportunity to expand government, expand programs, and overreach. And that's what I'm going to continue, like Governor LePage, we're going to be fiscal hawks, tighten up, actually reduce our budgets. And that extra revenue then could be put into the rainy day fund and used to help rebuild our infrastructure. You know, some of the things that we've let go in the search of just starting all these social programs and dumping more money into education with no measurable results to prove that they need that money.
You know, companies must compete today, and whether real or perceived, the shortage of tech-savvy people have affected the way companies do business. I'm sure you've seen that at Moody's. This is a hiring challenge for the state. Some say the reason is a skills gap. Others say, hey, we've got a situation, we've got older workers, which, of course, is a very large workforce in Maine. Do you agree there's a skills gap, and what do you plan to do over the next 4 years if elected to deal with that?
There's no question about it, and I'll tell you why, and your listeners out there, why I am absolutely the right guy at the right time. The most employable skills that people can have, and you can back me up on this, Dave, are hybrid. Okay, it used to be you go to a four-year school, you know, get a degree, a professional degree, or you kind of go into service business, trades, whatever. The most employable skills that we have today is a hybrid. You have to have, you're able to bundle the skills of having technical aspect of education and experience as well as the professional side. So you need both. You need critical thinking, strategic thinking, problem solving, but you also need the hands-on technical experience to know how to program, know how to run computerized equipment and machinery. When you bundle those skills together, and again, I got my blue-collar background where I'm a tradesperson as well as my executive experience in actually running and growing a main business and organizational skills. So that's exactly what we need in the 21st century workforce. Technical skills, hands-on, experiential learning, coupled with the professional skills that you would get in a 2 or 4 year degree. That's what employers are looking for.
You're correct in terms of it's certainly both sides of that coin are areas that we need to focus on. If you look at that today in the workforce, how do we solve that problem over the next 4 years about getting the workforce ready so quickly because the needs are in such high demand today?
Here's what we do. The first thing that we do, Dave, is make it a requirement for every vocational and career tech ed, and I'm talking at the high school level, and we can migrate into the community college. Every tech instructor, vocational instructor in the state of Maine would have to work 2 weeks a year, one in the spring, one in the fall, at a best-in-class business in their respective field. So, for example, okay, someone that's teaching auto body or collision repair, if you will, would have to work at Moody's for a week. That gives us the ability to give that instructor a non-binding assessment. You know, can they write an estimate? Can they run the latest frame machine, the laser-guided frame machine equipment that we have? Do they understand the paint products and processes? So that way there, that tech instructor not only has his academic abilities in the classroom, but he becomes real-world, best-in-class, work-ready skills that he can take and put back into the classroom. And here's the other thing it does. It opens up job shadowing, internships, and job placement opportunities with local businesses, which is exactly what employers need. So that would be an instant, you know, right now, what we could do to make our VOC and career tech ed programs the best in the country.
Today, we're talking with Sean Moody, who's a businessman running for governor as a Republican candidate. I'm your host, David Chulo, and welcome to the HR Power Hour. How do we solve the real issue of graduates leaving the state due to the reality of perception of either a lack of great jobs or good jobs or a lack of good high-paying jobs?
Okay, here's my answer for that. And I've been to so many forums. There'll be 200 or 300 people at these forums, Dave, and you and I are about the same age group. And I say to them, how many people in this room started working at 15 or younger? And virtually all, you know, the vast majority of hands go up because they're, you know, demographic. What I would do is, as your next governor, we would put our teenagers back to work, enable them to go out into our local communities, get a job just like we did, that not only teaches them fiscal responsibility, how to handle money, to deal with adults other than the parents or the school, and help build a little self-esteem and self-confidence before they go out into the real work world, you know, full-time work world, if you will. That's what's lacking in our society today. Our teenagers, the ones that aren't college-bound especially, they're sitting on the couch, you know, they're involved with iPads and the Internet, and they're not engaged in our local communities and our local economy. Employers need help, and they're willing to hire these teenagers. You know, we've got to provide a tax credit for the employers to make it worthwhile for them to bring them on. They're not experienced labor, they're not skilled, but they're willing and they're excited about bringing young people into their organizations to teach them some life skills and work-ready skills that they need desperately. They're not getting in the classroom and they're not getting at home. That's what keeps them here. But to your question, because they establish relationships in the local community, that's what keeps them, because they become vested and passionate about our state and wanting to give back into the community that they live, instead of just being expected to go to a four-year college and you're out of here. We got to change the narrative, change the message, and change those expectations.
You mentioned infrastructure, and of course, infrastructure not only includes roads, bridges, rail, and other structures like that, but it also includes broadband.
Yes.
As you look at the state, there is certainly a challenge of geography. There's certainly a challenge of rural Maine versus, you know, if we want to call it Portland or southern Maine. How do you look at that over the next 4 years and your plans to deal with this real challenging issue? Because it is a hindrance to job creation.
No question. And where Maine is a very rural state, you know, the math just doesn't add up. When you're running fiber, which all of our 11 locations are hooked to fiber, so we understand, you know, the value of bandwidth and technology and running our operations. But stretch out into our rural areas of our state, which need broadband desperately, the math just isn't work. You can't run 40 miles of cable to hook up four service customers. No, it just doesn't work. That's why we don't have it. The good news for Maine people is, in the rural areas of our country, I was at Brunswick Landing with Steve Levesque just recently, and they have a company over there that's building rockets, these miniature rockets, to deploy miniature satellite up into the atmosphere that will actually create a broadband network across the country. This technology is here. It's going to be employable or deployable, and we're going to see it in the next 2 to 5 years. So that will open up vast amounts of economic opportunities in our rural communities, which we desperately need. So I'm really excited about that.
Today we're talking with businessman Sean Moody, who is running for governor as a Republican candidate. I'm your host, David Chulo. One of the other questions that have certainly come up, or issues I should say, is the voters of the state of Maine voted to continue to increase the minimum wage every year for the next few years. It's currently $10 an hour. It's going up to $12. Some say that's certainly not enough. It should go $15, $20 an hour. What's your position on the minimum wage versus the living wage, and how do you see your administration dealing with this issue statewide if elected?
Well, I'm sensitive to this, and I think as a lot of employers are. The thing that we don't like, which this is the real rub, is we don't like government telling us how to run our business. And we can go right back to the financial collapse back in 08. When government got involved, you know, they picked winners and losers. They broke the franchise agreements with the car companies. They bailed them out. The little dealers went out of business. You know, that's what happens when government breaks the natural capitalistic cycle that we've always had in America. You know, we're going to have people that are going to fail. Businesses are going to fail. But somebody's going to capitalize on that failure. So when you start picking and losing who's going to, you know, win and who we're going to prop up, business people resent it, because it's like we have to find ways to compete and we have to be competitive. And that benefits the consumer. So when the government says you're going to pay people X amount, it drives up the cost, it drives up the price, which affects all of us, every consumer, and people resent it because it's like, government, you can't run your own business. Don't try to tell us how to run ours. So I do not put the escalation clause in the minimum wage language or law. I think it's going to really hurt the rural areas of our state. And we don't pay minimum wage. I mean, most employers don't. We're only talking about a very small population of employers that have to pay minimum wage. And these are usually, like the people I'm talking about, the teenagers, the first job folks out there that are getting skills. It's a job, you know, and they're going to take those skills and take them elsewhere and move up the economic ladder and wage ladder. The other thing, David's important, is as you described, unemployment's an all-time low here. And just naturally, wages are rising now. So it would have happened on its own. They should have left it alone. Take out the escalation clause, and I think that is a real rub with Maine employers. We're 48th in business friendly. And that's exactly the reason why, is because government is trying to tell us how to run our business, and we don't like it.
Do you support a training wage or a lower wage for those 14, 15, 16-year-olds that are just working through the system?
Absolutely. And again, people can say this, oh, if he's moody, you know, he's a business guy, you know, wants to pay lower wages. It's not that at all. Think about this. I want the listeners to really think about this. These folks go on to a two-year or four-year school. They pay to go to school to get an education. So when they go to an employer, first-time job, the employer trains them, okay, educates them on how to perform or how to integrate themselves into the work environment. There's a cost associated with that for the employer. So if there's not a benefit to the employer in terms of, like you said, that would absolutely promote a tax credit to help these employers to incentivize them, the teenagers, to come back into our workplace. The value of that is immeasurable. And I tell young people, Dave, and I'm sure you adopt this, when you're young, don't pay attention to what you earn. Pay attention to what you learn. But don't go down the road for 50 cents more an hour. If you're in a healthy environment that's challenging you and you're learning, that knowledge will be with you for a lifetime. No one can take that away from you. So be a sponge, learn all you can, and then go out there and chase your dreams.
The city of Portland is talking about paid sick time. What's your position on this?
Well, I think it goes right back to, you know, the basic premise of philosophy of government should not be running our businesses for us. I mean, that's private enterprise, and that's capitalism. It's freedom. If you don't provide good benefits, good pay, and a good work environment, you're not going to be able to hire anybody, nor are you going to be able to keep anybody on board. Nobody knows this better than you do, Dave. So creating that high-performance work environment takes all of the above. You've got to treat people right. You've got to pay them good. You've got to give them good benefits and a good environment to work in, the tools that they need to be successful. And that's what every employer faces right now. So to say you've got to, you know, give paid sick time off, you know, longer maternity leave, higher minimum wage, these are all tension points for businesses here in the state of Maine. They resent the fact that government is overstepping and overreaching their responsibilities and trying to tell us how to run our businesses, which they should be helping us run our business, not, you know, standing in the way of us running our business.
Today we're talking with businessman Sean Moody, who is running for governor as a Republican candidate. I'm your host, David Shulo. Employers are concerned with the impending recreational legalization of marijuana, especially with this opioid epidemic that is certainly going on. It's a violation of federal law, but employers are certainly concerned because there are going to be different classes of people. For example, federal workers or federal employers or federal contractors will have to deal with one thing. CDL drivers will have to deal with one thing, and then regular employees will have to deal with another. What's your position on this topic, and what does your administration look to do about this issue?
Well, the first thing I want to say, the common denominator to some of these things you're bringing up goes right back to the citizens' referendum. We've got to reform the citizens' referendum, which has really constructed a fourth branch of government, and they've kind of hijacked the legislature. You know, we have a legislature for a reason. You can agree or disagree whether they do the job effectively, but that legislature is in place to have public opinion, you know, public support on bills so that people have the ability to weigh in on, and the recreational marijuana bill is a perfect example of that. And to answer your question, as an employer, no, I do not support it. And I said this to several people. I said, look, would you advocate to take away the ability to do a blood test on alcohol? And they're like, well, no, of course not. You know, we wouldn't be able to tell someone, prove if someone was drinking and driving, you know, drunk driving. I said, exactly. And right now, there's no clinically proven way to test for marijuana for impairment. And until they come up with that, I can't support it. Because you know as well as I do, people can drive impaired. They can cause, you know, an accident or death. And literally, with a good lawyer, walk away from it. And that, to me, is reckless and it's irresponsible. Now, do I personally care if someone's smoke a pot at their house on the weekend? No. I mean, that should be up to that individual. But you're right. It flies in the face of federal law. There's a direct conflict there. They passed it. The legislature's going to have to figure out how they're going to implement it. But me personally, I'm not in favor of the law until they come up with a way, the clinically proven way, to test for impairment.
Another issue that employers say is a huge concern, of course, we all know, is the health care issue. Costs are going up. One of the examples I use that if I moved my company to New Hampshire, I looked at the healthcare costs for the same plan, same company, it'd be 30% less. How do we deal with that issue? And how do you and your new administration, if you're elected governor, plan to address this critical issue for employees as well as employers?
Well, first thing I want to say, Dave, is I want to compliment you on your line of questioning. It's fantastic. These are the real issues facing the people of Maine, facing the employers of Maine, facing our economy. Healthcare costs are at an unsustainable pace. They're going up 20-30% a year, which is really like a mortgage payment for most people. It's unsustainable. It's taking our middle class and our small business employers. It's devastating. So there's only three healthcare insurance providers in the state. We don't have the competition. And to answer your question, we absolutely have to be able to buy insurance across state lines. There's 100 auto insurance companies in the state of Maine, okay? And we're in the business. Believe me, we deal with them every day. Auto insurance in the state of Maine is the cheapest of any state in the country right now. That's when the system's working. You've got choice. You've got competition. The consumer benefits from that. So we would absolutely, number one priority would be to lower the health care cost and to lower the health care insurance premiums here in the state of Maine. But being able to buy across state lines, it's absolutely got to happen.
Do you also support the association grouping? In other words, associations being able to band together?
Dave, as you know, 90%, I think people should take note of this, and roughly 43,000 businesses in the state of Maine, of which 90% of them are like 15 people or less. I mean, Maine is a small business state, believe me.
There is no question.
So what a small business could do is belong to a national organization. Let's say a florist, for example. A florist has five people working. Small floral shop. Great business, local community business. They sign on to the National Florist Association, whatever. Now they're in a population of 5,000 members. With the economies of scale, with 5,000 members, they could buy insurance for a third of the cost. And that's exactly what we've got to put in place, Dave. We have to be able to buy. These small companies have got to have the economies of scale of larger businesses or corporations have the same buying power, purchasing power that the big companies do in order to compete.
Let's discuss the issue of Maine state taxes. I don't really know anybody that says, yep, I think I want to pay some more taxes. At least I'm not aware of any owner, business leader, or a resident that says, my gosh, I would love to send more money up to Augusta or to the feds.
Oh, man.
So tell me what your plan is specifically, twofold. If you could.
Right. It's twofold. It's number one, you're right. I think we're like the third highest tax state in the country. So not only is it the cost of taxes, but it's also, I think, just as equally much a frustration is where does the money go that we send up there? I mean, would you agree? I mean, it's a two-pronged frustration. And our property taxes have continued to go up and to climb, and it's just unsustainable. So we would lead by example at the state level. We combine the Maine Turnpike Authority, roll it into the DOT. We do not need two entities with all the redundant buildings, administration. I'm not talking about selling the plow trucks, okay? We've got to maintain that road to the level that it's maintained today. But there's so many redundancies. We could roll the main building as a $14 million building of the Turnpike Authority, roll it back over into the private property tax rolls. We don't need all this redundancy in state government, and we would lead by example to lower our cost and roll these quasi-agencies together. And that would create a role model, but also we'd incentivize, Dave, for local communities to do the same thing. You know, why do we have a school facilities department and we've got public works? You know, why do we have a finance director? And all that administrative overhead is duplicated in every single local community across the state. It's time we get with the 21st century. We don't duplicate services here in our private enterprise. We can't afford to. And neither can the taxpayers continue to afford to send all this money to Augusta and have all this duplicate of services and redundancy that just costs us a fortune and doesn't make us competitive.
Today we're talking with businessman Sean Moody, who is running for governor as a Republican candidate. I'm your host, David Shulo. You know, it's interesting as employers are dealing with trying to get employees to come to Maine, right? And certainly my organization does a lot of trying to attract talent to Maine. It's a big issue in terms of the cost structure, especially in the Portland market. It's as expensive as Boston in many aspects, but certainly the income levels are not as high. Do you see a way to try to understand from a gubernatorial standpoint what you can do to help deal with the costs of living in the state of Maine?
Well, I think we're on a demographic. Some people say it's a demographic or the perfect storm. We've got a shrinking population and an aging demographic. I see it as the perfect opportunity for young people. You know, if you want upward mobility, there's never been a time in the state's history it's been stronger than right now. Because, you know, again, you and I are around the same age group, Dave. 5 to 10 years, we're going to retire out. Well, somebody's got to run this place. So young people, we've got to change that message to guidance counselors, parents, and teachers. Stop telling our kids there's no opportunity here. There's tons of it. And the other thing that I would advocate is a focused strategy to reach out and target a 25 to 45-year-old former Mainers that have left the state and incentivize them to come back and revitalize our workplace and our communities. These are healthy people with talent. They're getting ready to raise their families if they haven't already started. And they're looking at the world differently now with raising a family. They're looking at, you know, going to school, going through metal detectors, you know, these neighborhoods that aren't safe. Maine is a safe state. They know what it is. They were raised here, and they know the only place to raise their family is Maine. So we just got to reach out and show them what the opportunities are here in the state of Maine, the job opportunities, and they'll come back. They just, no one's reaching out to them. We could offer tuition reimbursement. You know, employers would help foot the bill for some of that. Student loan forgiveness. Provide them incentives. That's all they need to come back and revitalize and reconnect them with their families.
As we wrap up the show in our last 2 minutes here, why should employers and employees in the state of Maine vote for Sean Moody?
Well, I think for all the reasons that I just described, I don't look at problems as, you know, talking points or political gamemanship. I've been solving problems for 40 years. When you look at how we run our organization, Dave, and you know it well, you know, 34% of our company is owned by our coworkers. We give 10% of our after-tax profit sharing back to our coworkers that earned it. You know, we've created a culture, a high-performance culture here at Moody's, and we could do the same thing in the state of Maine. I've said this at debates and things. I say, you know, Moody's has been recognized to be one of the best places to work in Maine. As your next governor, I'll make Maine the best place to work in America.
Sean, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. I appreciate you taking your time from your busy schedule. And, hey, if you become the gubernatorial nominee, love to have you back on for an hour topic as we get ready for the big general election.
Absolutely, Dave. Be my pleasure. And I think I would just end with this for the voters out there. You know, I'm not a politician. And if you look at Governor LePage, he's an outsider. He's a businessman. President Trump's an outsider, businessman. I'm the outsider, and I'm the businessman. If you're looking for a politician, I'm not your candidate. I've got 40 years of executive experience. This is an executive job, and I feel like I'm ready with the vision and experience to help lead Maine forward.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it. You take care.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to today's HR Power Hour special program. It was my honor to speak with Attorney General Mills, as well as businessman Sean Moody. I hope you learned a lot from it. Get out there and vote in the primary on June 12th and make your voice heard. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk, WLOB, 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk, WLOB, 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.